Welcome to the Freedom Report.
What I love about Austin Peterson is his love of the battle. He wants to fight.
Austin was, of course, the rabble-rouser, just to make sure I stayed Rothbardian.
We live in a world fraught with danger, and there is a certain amount of danger that the public must endure in order to secure the blessings of liberty.
For economic freedom and personal liberty. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Good morning. Austin Peterson here. Today is Monday, November the 19th, and welcome back to my podcast, the Freedom Report podcast. Hope you enjoy the show today. And today we're going to be talking about a subject that just boggles the mind in how stupid it is. One of those topics that you kind of have to laugh at if it wasn't also so frankly terrifying. And a lot of people have been talking about this story in the last week about a representative, Democrat, obviously, who was talking about nuking the United States if we decided to resist gun control by the federal government. And I've got this article from Reason Magazine. I'm going to talk about this and read this story to you, and we'll discuss it. And then I want to talk a little bit about, the concept of an American Civil War. Like, what would nuking the United States, what would really bring people to that kind of level of rage and anger that you would nuke a country to save it? And I'll talk about the concept of an American Civil War and, some of the what could be the mitigating factors. I've got a terrible, horrible piece of excrement article from a website called Task and Purpose that makes some interesting observations with all of the wrong conclusions. And so strap in if you're in your commute Monday morning. I hope you enjoy this. Representative Eric Swalwell thinks gun confiscation will work out fine because the government has nukes. While Swalwell insists it was sarcasm, it's bad form to reply to a citizen aggrieved at openly threatening constitutional rights connected with self and civil defense with implied threat of mass murder. What does it take to get a U.S. House member to sarcastically, he insists, very publicly threaten to nuke American citizens who want to defend their constitutional rights under the Second Amendment? Nothing more than pushing back on Twitter against that Congressman Eric Swalwell. His proposal from earlier this year to fully ban and buy back every one of what he wants to designate as assault weapons, with the added bonus of criminally prosecuting anyone who chooses to defy it. Apparently feeling a bit threatened by this proposal to go after him and millions of other Americans for possessing an individually owned tool of self-defense and recreation, this was tweeted by Joe Biggs. Joe Biggs tweeted, "So basically Rep. Swalwell wants a war, because that's what you would get. You're out of your effing mind if you think I'll give up my rights and give the government all the power." Swalwell, willing to make sure the war against any possible American citizens' resistance over gun confiscation doesn't fall into the endless quagmire of so many other guerrilla wars the past century, reminds the citizen that while the government, as represented by him, wants your guns, it has something far stronger it would be perfectly happy to use against you if you complain, he said. "And it would be a short war, my friend. The government has nukes. Too many of them, but they're legit. I'm sure if we talked, we could find common ground to protect our families and communities." Just a little chilling, isn't it? That mafia-like reminder that we can and will kill you, followed by, "Thus I'm sure that we can talk it out." Well, see, this is why I say government is nothing but an organized mafia. Swalwell followed up with a bunch of, "well, he started it" posts and insists he was being sarcastic. But that mindset, including its delusional belief that the American military would rather mass murder its own citizens and allow them to continue to enjoy Second Amendment rights, as applied to an arbitrary, rather unimportant set of weapons, reveals why it's so difficult for America's gun owners and those who support their rights to stay calm when politicians talk about their own vision of common sense gun control. And, that article is by Brian Doherty. Thank you, Brian. Really good article. A little wordy, not the best to read, but you know what? Maybe I should write my own damn article and read it out into the podcast. No, you did great, Brian. Really appreciate you. Thanks for that piece. So the interesting thing is, when you think about what this is, I mean, first of all, let's just talk about government as it is. Government is just the gun in the room. That's all government is. All government is cops. Everybody in government is pretty much a cop. The whole point of a government is to use force to get people to comply, to do what you want to do, right? And, you know, it doesn't matter what the agency is. Every bureaucracy basically is pretty much a cop. They're there to ensure that the law is being followed. And sometimes the law is up to interpretation by the people who enforce the laws. It's a shame, but let's just get government. What I like about this exchange, or what I like about what Rep. Swalwell has done here, is that he has shown bald-facedly government officials for what they really are. The type of power-hungry, craven people who go and take positions in government tend to be, not all of them, but tend to be these kinds of people. The kind of people who, you know, these are the people who were either bullied or were bullies, you know, when they were kids, and they just get off on having an authoritarian complex, or they're a victim, they were a victim, and they want to, you know, spread the persecution complex to the rest of the United States. And so the thing about this tweet that really, I think, stands out to me, I actually kind of like that he tweeted it, because it shows people the mindset of our quote-unquote leadership. It shows the mindset of the people in government. Well, we'll take what we want, and if you resist us, we will kill you. Which is why, you know, and I've said this in other podcasts before, and I've said this, I even think I said this in a presidential debate, maybe even a U.S. Senate debate. I know I said it at some Senate events, some like Lincoln Day dinners and stuff. You know, every law should end with the statement ... or we will kill you, because that is what we agree to when we live. That's you know, being murdered for collecting rain, if for resisting the fact that you're not allowed to collect rainwater on your own private property, is of course the, you know, that's ultimately what you get if you resist. If you resist any of the laws, ultimately you can be killed. You can be killed for not obeying every rule and regulation on the code books. And of course, you know, we decide, you know, this democratically, so that makes it okay, apparently. But, and this guy gets democratically elected, of course, and he's from California. But, you know, if you think about, like, I started looking up what a new U.S. civil war might look like, right? I was reading some articles from, like, foreignpolicy.com. I read the New Yorker. I read, actually, a piece in, like, the Intelligencer. I think it's, like, New York Magazine. And it was so funny because the article was about maybe it's time to break up. It was about the United, about, you know, parts of the United States breaking away and seceding. And I had to laugh because I just remember during the Tea Party years when the left and the Democrats, when the Republicans and conservatives and libertarians were talking about secession or talking about breaking up or, you know, any of that kind of stuff. And it was like traitors, treason, kill the traitors. You know what I mean? Like the, you know, the Lincolnians of the left came out and were just absolutely livid over all of this talk of secession or talking of Texas breaking away and becoming a Texas Republic. But now that Trump is president, now that Republicans have control of the Senate, now that conservatives tend to hold the majority of decision-making power in our government and our bureaucracies, of course, now it's okay to talk about secession and breaking up. So I don't want to read those stupid articles from liberals anyway, because you can't trust them. And it's just bullshit speculation, because the liberals don't have guns. So how are they ever going to enforce any kind of a secession? The only violent leftists that you get are communists. And we tend to kill those kinds of people, you know, before they make it out of, you know, South America. Yep. Che Guevara. while we're talking about Che Guevara, FYI, little plug. We've got a really funny shirt. It's making fun. It's an NPC Che Guevara shirt. It's on the Team Liberty store. Go to teamliberty.store if you want to pick up that hilarious shirt of Che Guevara, but he's got the NPC face. Really funny. We've been selling them like hotcakes. It's actually really great. So don't forget to get yours at teamliberty.store. So looking back, you know, it's funny because we talk about, you know, Second American Civil War might look like. And, of course, it's all just bullshit speculation. And one of the most interesting things that stuck out to me about all of the, you know, discussions about it were that, you know, one, the assumption was that the government would entirely step in to crush the rebellion. But because the United States is so different from how we were during the last Civil War, or I say the last Civil War, we're not in one now, the American Civil War, you know, back then, the American Civil War festered because people had allegiances and alliances to their states. But people don't really have that as much anymore. They're much more tied to ideology, or they're tied to political party. Much less so do people have like the kind of nationalistic pride towards their own individual states that would cause, you know, it's not a regional. I mean, there are some regional factors to the dissension in politics and the body politic of the United States, but we're much less tied to our individual states. We see ourselves more as a, you know, one singular nation. And people are much less nationalist about their states than they used to be, which is what, you know, led to the cause of the outbreak of the American Civil War. All of that and slavery and tariffs and lots of other things. You know, all of the skirmishes that we saw right here in between Kansas and Missouri, the border ruffians and the Jayhawkers and the border wars. So anyways, one of the things, too, that people assume is that, you know, all of what the military would, if they would play a role in it, what would they just crush the rebellion? Well, you have to think about it. A lot of the military is conservative. Probably a majority of the military are conservative and conservative leaning, or maybe some of them, many of them are libertarians. I know many great veterans and military types who are libertarians. They don't tend to be the ones in the higher echelons, that's for sure. But when you think about it, you know, a lot of those people are probably would join the rebellion. Those people would never nuke the United States. So it's a bullshit theoretical, hypothetical. But I saw this article on Task and Purpose, and it really just pissed me off because it just makes the kinds of statist assumptions that, to me, just get to the very heart of what absolutely drives me bonkers about American politics. It just makes me want to throw up my hands, throw up the table, right, and just walk away from it all, because the underlying assumptions are just always statist for what could be the causes of a civil war. And this article was written in Task and Purpose back in October of 2018 by a woman named Emily Whalen. And she asked the question, how likely is a new American civil war? And she says, surprising lessons from Lebanon's conflict, right? Comparing Lebanon and their civil war to what might happen in the United States. A lot of BS in here, guys. There's some interesting observations. Just go with me on this. She says, what is the likelihood of civil war in the United States? Few Americans ask me this question, despite the fact that I'm a scholar of civil war. The wars I studied took place in the Middle East, though, and few Americans believe the United States shares any similarities with the benighted nations of the region. Yeah, well, you know, that's because we're not like them. Of course, there are vast, significant differences between the U.S. and Lebanon, yet civil war as a phenomenon does not respect categorical boundaries between nations. Civil wars erupt in small states, as in large states, in wealthy states, as in poor states, in democracies, as in dictatorships. Oh, okay, then we're just like Lebanon then, okay. When Lebanon's civil war broke out in 1975, Washington Post Jonathan Randall earned the dubious honor of having predicted the war nearly a year before. In 1974 article from the Post, Randall measured the domestic political situation in Lebanon against what he called his shit detector, a veteran journalist's rubric for assessing the health of a particular nation, regardless of appearances. Now wait until you determine what they see as a nation's health. His article was counterintuitive because Lebanon in 1974, despite its geography, still enjoyed a reputation as, quote, the Switzerland of the Middle East, a glittering, bustling gateway between East and West, a banker's republic, awash in oil money. Movie stars and socialites hobnobbed with sheiks and intellectuals in Beirut's sumptuous hotels. The country's booming economy and official neutrality in the Israeli-Palestinian dispute made it a safe bet for investors looking to gain a foothold in the region. Jet-setters and financiers rejoiced in Lebanon's freewheeling open market. Ooh, now there you go. Here's your first clue when somebody says that they had a freewheeling open, they had an open market. Randall saw something sinister in it. No shit. A Washington Post reporter saw something sinister in an open market? Well, here we go. 7 months before clashes between Palestinian armed groups and right-wing Lebanese militias escalated into full-scale warfare, he observed four phenomena, markers of the deep rot at the heart of the Lebanese system. Now, get this, guys. I know you probably, I didn't know a whole lot about the civil war in Lebanon until I started doing research for this podcast tonight. And let me just tell you, none of the reasons that she's going to list here are why this civil war happened. But here's the four reasons why this liberal decided that there was a civil war in Lebanon. Number one, mail service was fast rivaling Italy's in unreliability. Can you imagine man, if the mail service in the United States wasn't happening, boy, I'm sure that we would tear it down because we're like Lebanon in certain ways. That's bullshit. Absolute and total and utter horse excrement. Sorry, I got to try and keep the cussing to a minimum. Quote, listen to this. The real estate frenzy in Beirut, fueled by oil money flowing in from the Gulf, meant that, quote, almost every green space in Beirut fell victim to development. Did you hear this? Let me read this again. There was a real estate frenzy fueled by oil money, and almost every green space in Beirut fell victim to development. Ooh, now this is what she thinks marks a rot at the heart of the system. That we had people buying real estate and people were developing. So that's what she's marking as a rot at the heart of the system. Now, here's one interesting little statistic, and maybe there's a point here. She says reported murders jumped from 27 to 317 in 4 years. But the thing with that is that she is, and then she makes her next point, a high proportion of individual gun ownership and a general tendency to ignore government gun control regulations. Now, isn't that interesting how she writes that? Oh, their murders jumped from 27 to 317, and then the next point, a high proportion of individual gun ownership. As if people are more likely to fight because they're allowed to own guns. They're more likely to fight if they have guns. I'm not sure that that correlation is causation, but of course, one of the interesting things that she doesn't mention here at all is religion, because what were the causes of the civil war in Lebanon? It was fucking religion. And I'll go into this in a little bit more detail later, but you can trace the beginning of the war back to this event. It was known as Black Saturday in 1975 when the PLO ambushed Christian members of a militia called Kataib, killing them, and this inflamed a situation that was growing inside the country for years. So if the murders jumped from 27 to 317, it probably had nothing to do with the fact that people had more guns. In fact, people were probably buying more guns because they could tell that there was a civil war coming because of all the religious strife that was happening in the region, because that's the Middle East, which makes it in many ways very different from the United States. And of course, she sees a rot in the country of being individual gun ownership. Well, if you have PLO squads, you know, violent death squads, then yeah, you're probably going to arm up. Now she goes and quotes Randall and talks about this. She says that that there was also a lack of free and decent schooling. Because not only does it have to be free, but it has to be decent. No public transportation or centralized garbage collection in Beirut. Well, you know, holy shit, you know, I can't tell you. We've got a streetcar here in downtown Kansas City, and if we didn't have that streetcar, I might riot. Increasingly low taxes. Oh, for members of Lebanon's highest income bracket, estimated in the article around 11% of income. And, of course, no social security system. Well, we have one, babe. We should be fine. Measuring the United States against the shit detector won't, of course, determine whether or not civil war break out in this country. Thank you. You could have just not written this article. Yet decaying internal systems are an important indicator for civil conflict. Yes, decaying internal system. Now, Randall's detector suggests there's room for optimism and concern in the United States. And just taking some of the things that she says in here that are supposed to be an item for concern or something that I actually think are optimistic. But here we go. Let's listen to this little list here. It says the U.S. Postal Service, despite declining mail volumes and burgeoning costs, remains comparatively reliable. While USPS faces many challenges in the realm of efficiency, one can still post a letter with near certainty that it will be delivered. And guys, let's not even go into the fact of how much money that the U.S. Post Office is losing right now. Maybe we should have a civil war just to get rid of the U.S. Post Office. No, just kidding. I would never nuke the United States because the Post Office sucks. Here we go, another list item. A very tight supply of affordable housing is pushing housing prices in the United States up. Of course, it depends on where you buy. In response, real estate developers are rushing to build more luxury housing. Instead of freeing up affordable housing for lower-income families, many cities are seeing a rise in un- or partially occupied housing as the wealthy purchase second and third homes. Well, damn it, Bernie Sanders, you got to stop buying up all the homes, man. You're gonna get us. The effect of these growing trends is a growing rent burden for middle and low-income families. The homicide rate in the United States is at its lowest point in history. Yay! Despite concerns over an uptick in murders between 2014 and 2016, the rate seems to have leveled off in 2017, well below a point well below historical rates. Reliable studies of gun ownership in the United States indicate the country has one of the highest proportions of gun ownership in the world, with some indications that the number of guns in the country outstrips the number of citizens. Ooh, boy. U.S. gun owners are more likely to own several guns, damn straight, and have access to relatively simple workarounds for nominal gun control regulations over the use of automatic weapons. I'm sorry, excuse me? Let me read this again. U.S. gun owners are more likely to own several guns, yep, and have access to relatively simple workarounds for nominal gun control regulations over the use of automatic weapons. It is not a simple workaround to get automatic weapons in the United States. This fake news. The United States enjoys a far better and more comprehensively accessible public school system than many other countries, yet worrying trends are evident, persistent underfunding, bullshit, and declining pay prompted several teachers' strikes earlier this year. The current administration's contempt for the Department of Education is evident, although its most extreme plans are unlikely to manifest. Yeah, that's a shame, because I would love to see some of these extreme plans manifest. I would love to end the Department of Education entirely. Political and social trends in the United States have long undermined efforts to improve public transportation in the country. Damn straight. The country's most famous mass transit system, the New York City subway, is facing acute problems due to overcrowding. Well, you know, maybe you should raise the prices. The current administration's tax bill disproportionately benefits those in the top income brackets. Oh, no! Rich people who pay all the taxes are not paying enough. Lowering their personal income tax rates from 39% to 37%. Oh, Lord. Given recent revelations about the widespread use of offshore tax havens among the American elite, Bill Hillary Clinton, seems likely that the real tax rates for the wealthy are much lower. Well, that's a sign for optimism for me. Partly due to the new tax bill, Social Security is facing a dire funding shortage. Old age benefits are likely to run out by 2034, although reduced benefits will remain available until 2093. Oh, Lord. 2093. Let's see. It's 2018 now. How old will I be? And see, it's 34 years. Man, old age benefits will run out right when I'm supposed to be collecting them, but reduced benefits will be available until 2093. Amazing. Yeah, that's a problem. We should probably get rid of that whole system. But anyways, you know, what an interesting thing, because of course, you know, not a single discussion there about the religious factors of the conflict in Lebanon. And, you know, some of these things that she quoted is that would necessarily be considered negatives, I think, are positives. Some of the positives that she quotes, I think, are negatives. But of course, the underlying assumption is always that the problem is, well, we're not giving away enough money to people. We're not taking enough money away from the rich, which is funny, because when you take away people's money, when you're stealing from people, from the high tax rates, you know, that's what actually causes people to want to secede. That's what actually wants to cause a war, you know, which we saw with our own War of Independence. Too high taxes, taxation without representation, you know, the Stamp Act. The Townsend Acts, the abominable acts that we just couldn't take anymore. You know, not the fact that we had too many guns. That, you know, America didn't fight a war of independence because we had too many guns sitting around, and it's like, oh well, the guns, we got to do something with these things. No, it's because they tried to take our guns. That's why we fired the first shot. Screw up one of the most important parts of American history. Nobody knows who fired the first shot at Lexington and Concord. It's the shot heard round the world. Let me make sure I get my American history for you guys right. Sorry, I'm just typing that a little bit. I'm typing in this a little bit late. The shot heard around the world is a phrase referring to several historical incidents, particularly the opening of the American Revolutionary War in 1775 and the assassination of Archduke Franz Ferdinand, but specifically the skirmish at North Bridge in the battles of Lexington and Concord. And this refers to the first shot of the American Revolution that was there, where British soldiers fell in the battle. Historically, no single shot can be cited as the first shot of the Battle of the War. That's what I thought. Shots were fired earlier at Lexington, Massachusetts, where 8 Americans were killed and a British soldier was slightly wounded. But accounts of that event are confused and contradictory. The North Bridge skirmish did see the first shots by Americans acting under orders, the first organized volley by Americans, the first British fatalities, and the first British retreat. Yeah. But, you know, let's go back to the cause of the civil war in Lebanon, because obviously it's not because they had too many guns and they had too much money and they were too free. Pretty sure that wasn't it. So listen, as after the 1948 Palestinian war, Lebanon received about 500,000 of Palestine's refugees. Following the Black September attack that I talked about, the PLO established itself in Lebanon to use it as a base of operation to attack Israel. Yes, but none of that was mentioned in this, right? This is why these lefties drive me effing nuts. Right. The Palestinians behaved as if they ruled Lebanon, and the Christian population began defending themselves from what they considered abuses. The country divided itself and switched up into sides between pro and against the PLO. Now, you can go straight back to these kinds of religious tensions and hostilities as for what brought about the civil war in Lebanon, not because they didn't have enough public transportation and the mail wasn't getting delivered. Again, when is the last time you felt like, you know, going to war because you couldn't get a letter delivered properly in the United States? And it does happen, by the way. It does happen. Anyways, civil war in the United States in the next 24 years, what are the chances going to happen? Not going to happen. Not going to happen because people are too weak in this country anyway. I don't think we should have a civil war, obviously. I don't even think we should secede like some people do, and now some conservatives do, and a lot of liberals apparently now do too. I think the people just need to leave each other the hell alone. I'm tired of all the statist assumptions underlying much of the conflicts that we have here in the world. You know, the problem is that we're not taking enough of people's money and spreading it around, and we're not taking enough of people's guns. And now we have Democrats who think that they should nuke the United States to take our guns. Molenlob, motherfuckers. Have a wonderful day.